Hey everybody, and welcome back. It's been a while. We had some technical difficulties last week, so we didn't get a show up, but we're back. We got another show for you. Wanted to lay some things out for you. Check us out on Facebook at Unsolicited Advice Podcast. Also, check out Ryan's blog at ryansunsolicitedadvice.blogspot.com and the Unsolicited Advice Show at gmail.com is where you can send your emails with any questions or anything like that. If you want to bring up a topic or just say hi, shoot us an email. We're always there. We got an interesting show today. I think it was fun to talk about. We talked about the apocalypse at length, different doomsday scenarios. What would you do? What do you think's coming? And that kind of naturally transitioned into a discussion about homelessness and our irrational fears of becoming homeless and how we kind of, you know, plan for this in the back of our minds, how this is going to happen for us someday. We fear, I guess, so we need to prepare. So if you've ever had these thoughts, send us an email. Tell us about them. We don't want to feel weird for thinking these things. So with that said, thanks again for listening, and enjoy the show.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Unsolicited Advice. Ryan Witkowski along with
J.R. Bennett. Hi.
Hey, guys. really enthusiastic today.
Great way to start things off.
All right. So first of all, apologize. We didn't put out a podcast last week. It isn't that we didn't record one. We definitely recorded one, and it was a fantastic podcast.
Actually, one of our best.
It was not one of our best, but it was about the afterlife. Was that the one?
Was it the near-death experience one?
No, we posted that one. What was last? Oh, last week was about quarter-life crisis.
Quarter-life crisis. Good. We can have a better discussion about it next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sort of your specialty is the... Well, your kind of area of interest is
quarter-life crises. Yeah, I'm focusing on studying the quarter-life crisis. I want to help people that are, like, yeah, emerging into adulthood. It's a less talked about area. We spent, I don't know, an hour or so talking about that, and unfortunately, it got deleted.
Yeah.
So, sorry, guys. We want to post something every week. You know, we want to be consistent, ideally.
Yeah, we lost some followers this week because we missed the post. And, oh, we didn't say what happened. What happened was we recorded it, and then... My voice, the track of my voice, for some reason, just vanished, and I don't know.
Really?
I don't know why.
Do you think we should, like, stop and figure out if it's recording now? Have you tested it since?
No, I haven't, but I can see this line right here. It's got some little zigzags on it, so I assume that means it's working.
Yeah, a squiggly line is a good indication.
At some point last week, that whole bar disappeared, and nobody noticed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So keep your eye on the
bar.
That's
why I sort of turned the computer at an angle this week, so we have two eyes on it.
Okay.
So just to be
safe. I'll share that responsibility with you.
Just to be safe. So we apologize for that. We're back at it. How are things going? I'm sorry?
No, we've got a really interesting topic for you guys today. We're going to talk about the apocalypse.
It is. We've been promising this, too. It's more of a fun topic.
We're going to deliver on our promise today.
It is. When I started watching The Walking Dead, and I started thinking if everything were to go to hell, if there was no... If we lost all utilities,
yeah.
If we didn't, you know, have gasoline available to us, if you know, just kind of this anarchy type of feel to things.
Yeah.
The zombies make it more interesting, but that's not realistic. What would I do? You know, and on top, I also often wonder if I become homeless, what I will do too, which is another topic in itself. So I'm often planning for my.
That's like a personal apocalypse.
It is a personal apocalypse.
So
you know?
We can, yeah, twist them that
way. I'll frequently walk by places and be like, if I'm ever homeless, this would be a good place to bunker down for a few days.
Hey, before we go too far, did you hear about that one NFL football player?
Well, there's a lot going on in NFL right now. There's Ray Rice beating the crap out of his girlfriend.
Right.
Adrian Peterson.
Uh-huh.
That's the guy.
Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, that's the only reason we talk about this is so we can tag it in our podcast.
That's right.
So now we're going to tag Adrian Peterson, Ray Rice, NFL, domestic violence, child abuse.
Child abuse, that's a good one.
That's what Adrian Peterson was in charge for. And so that'll get some hits.
Absolutely.
So we're trying.
So back to the apocalypse.
Yeah, back to the apocalypse.
So homelessness, kind of a personal apocalypse as well. So really it was like around when the show The Walking Dead started that you thought that you started thinking about this. This became like a real topic in your mind, which is pretty recent. I mean, The Walking Dead started about a couple of years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I started thinking about this, I would say, I don't know. Actually, I have a buddy of mine who has all this apocalypse. He has food stored up. He has guns are important. Mm-hmm. He has rope. He has gasoline. He has water. He has flashlights. He has knives, ammunition.
Right.
All these things. So I always think, I don't need to worry about it. I'm just going to go to Mitch's house.
Yeah.
In case something happens.
And he's just going to welcome you with open arms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but we live in the Bay Area. I would hope, and we've talked. I've sort of, planted the seed for that.
Okay.
In case it happens, I might be giving you a call.
I'm wondering, like, when it was around that you started thinking about, because I think a lot of people thinking about this. But when did it become like apparent in your mind that?
When I started watching when I started watching The Walking Dead, and I was remembering, and I started hearing, you hear about disasters overseas, like tsunamis happen, the nuclear issue, power plant over in Fukushima. Is that where it was? Right.
Yeah.
Things like 9/11 a few years ago, people forget there was a massive blackout on the East Coast for like 4 or 5 days in the middle of the summertime. There was no electricity available.
Right.
We live in the Bay Area. We just had an earthquake in Napa a few weeks ago, which wasn't that big of a deal here anyway. But there's a major fault line runs right underneath where I work at.
Right.
Eventually, things aren't always going to go so smoothly. I mean, one of the major issues that I've been reading about in this country is the infrastructure, so the power sources, you know.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think everybody. I remember I was talking to a friend of mine back in the day about this, and I would talk about it, and they just sort of shake their head and be like, "Seriously, Ryan." I'd be like, you're not going to think anything about it until it actually happens. You're going to be like, why wasn't I prepared for this?
Right. Well, I think one of the problems is, well, first of all, the reason I ask when you started thinking about it, because I kind of have a theory about when this started. Because I think that there's like, look, there's back to like the 50s and building bomb shelters and the whole like, you know, Cold War thing. And people have been preparing for, you know, doomsday type scenarios, but there is a surge of doomsday preppers, and it's like popularized in media, and I think it's directly following all of these like documentary shows on disasters. Like there was a show called Mega Disasters, and every week they talk about a different super unlikely disaster that was apocalyptic in scope, you know. And you know, shortly after, everybody's talking. And when you talk to somebody about an apocalypse scenario, or you watch a doomsday prepper show and you see what they're talking about, they have 1,000 different scenarios of what can go wrong. And a lot of times it, like, is actually one of the topics of one of these disaster shows, you know? So it's, like, directly informed. But that's one of the things that's difficult about preparing is, what am I preparing for? You know, there are 1,000 different scenarios that can really shake things up. So which one, what eggs, you know, do I put my basket in?
What are the possible scenarios offhand I could think of? Well, as you're talking, I think one of the major ones I think that people don't realize, which is I don't know how major it is. I mean, how often does it happen? But a meteor.
Right? Okay. Yeah.
That's a worldwide disaster. Even if it hits on the other side of the world.
Right.
Okay, from what I understand.
It could be. I mean, you saw that one that hit over Russia not too long
ago.
And
broke all those windows, sent like hundreds of people to the hospital.
Right.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. And that was a little tiny rock, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was.
I have no idea.
I have no idea. I just made that up. I don't really know. But that's one. Earthquake. Blackout, I think, is a legitimate concern, is a blackout. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about terrorism. I don't know how much that is made up in the media. Probably a lot of it, but terrorism is one.
Right.
And you can also have apocalypse on a local level too, a regional level.
Right.
For example.
Or if there's like an outbreak of something, get quarantined or something like that.
Which is, look at Africa right now. There's the Ebola virus.
The Ebola virus. Katrina was apocalypse for a little while. I mean, it was a disaster. I mean, you can kind of call it that for until something's cleared up. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
you can call it a real.
Yeah, we're not even talking about like worldwide, you know, devastating thing. We can just talk about, you know, Katrina. There was a whole city shut down and mobilized for a long period of time. In San Francisco, if there was a major earthquake, for example, and the bridges broke, Bay Bridge, the San Francisco Bridge, that's a big cutoff from how would you get over, for example? All those people need to get out. There's fires.
There are a lot of marathon swimmers in the Bay Area.
Gas, we're a very fit city. Yeah. So there will be actually, you know, a lot of swimming going across the bay.
I think that what makes the apocalypse, what makes most of these scenarios dangerous isn't the disaster itself, the initial thing. I mean, clearly there are a bunch of things that can, you know, take out the planet or take you out when they happen. Like if you're on the beach and there's a tsunami, you're at the wrong place at the wrong time. But that's a minority of the people. Really, it's afterward, like when there is the blackout or the water shut off, and everybody starts freaking out on each other. You know what I mean? I think that's what I fear the most about an apocalypse or disaster scenario.
Is people acting like fools.
Yeah, people becoming very competitive for, you know, feeling a scarcity.
You see how it is in Christmas. If there's a, you know,
oh my God,
the Beanie Babies, I don't know, those things
are popular. Black Friday,
if there's a some freaking Cabbage Patch doll, people will stab each other for that Cabbage Patch doll. They don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So, yeah, imagine food or water. But if you see it, I mean, even in the situation with that young man in St. Louis who was shot, there was looting in stores afterwards. You know, people were, and I don't know how much it had to do with racial tensions. I think a lot of times it's just people see an opportunity to do something and they'll take advantage of it, you know.
I heard that about the L.A. riots, too, that a lot of people that were involved in the riots were, there were a lot of people that were very angry, but also it was opportunistic. I mean, people were stealing, like, diapers and stuff.
Well, people do things like that, even, like, when there's a championship, a major league sports championship in a city, people take to the streets in celebration, and they'll just start looting and robbing and doing all kind of crazy stuff. And that's a sports championship. That's not saying there's no lack of resources.
Exactly. The social contract changes when everything goes to shit, and people set the pace for each other. You know, there's this group mentality. I mean, one person lights a fire in the street, and the next person's like, all right, let's see what else we can. Let's tip this car over, you know, and it can escalate. And that's what I definitely fear the most. So I think that in an apocalypse scenario, one of my main goals would be getting away from everybody else.
So you want to get away?
I think that's what I would want to do. I would want to get away.
That's what they did in The Walking Dead. They were in Atlanta, and they dispersed the city into the countryside of the South.
Right.
So
I love how The Walking Dead is like
it's the reference point.
Right.
It's the only reference I have. It seems pretty real to me, except for the zombies. But I wonder, okay, so what do you do? Where are you going?
That's what I think I want to go. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I have no idea. I've never really planned it out.
And where are you going to get the gas from? Where are you going to get the food from?
Exactly.
The water, medicine.
That's the thing is
Communication.
Look, I have an LED flashlight.
That's good. Okay.
That's made by Duracell. That also has an AM/FM radio in it, and I can crank it.
Oh, good.
Okay. That's half my preparing right there.
That's good.
I've got light and at least one-way communication.
Radio, you can get some emergency notifications.
And entertainment. Maybe I can get like a nice like mariachi thing going on.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I've never really planned that out. I mean, you can go down that rabbit hole, you know, and you can go keep going down the rabbit hole and keep getting more and more prepared, but I've never decided to drink that particular brand of Kool-Aid. Go down there.
Well, I think that's why it gets such a bad rap, because you only hear about the people who have like bunkers on their house and have like canned soups and crap. You know what I mean?
Right. I have prepared to a degree. I mean, after this earthquake, my girlfriend and I had some motivation, so we actually went out and got like a few days of food and water, like one of those kits. We went on and looked on the on different websites and checked out like lists of stuff that they recommend, and we got most of the stuff. You know, we put like,
what was on the list?
Oh, there was like a radio, a change of clothes, gloves, like work gloves, so if you need to move rubble and stuff. There was like feminine products, a first aid kit. I don't know if I said, I obviously radio and flashlight.
Yeah.
Food, like a few days of food and water. Stuff like that. I mean,
and
I can't
where do you
remember.
Keep, where do you keep this stuff at?
So we bought a bin. They recommend that you put it outside, actually, in case like your house falls down.
Oh,
know,
okay.
It's still accessible. So it's outside of your home. You keep, we have like a bin with all of this stuff inside of it. Oh, like a sleeping bag, mm-hmm. you know, that would be in there too. And we have it underneath some stairs outside, so it's kind of out of the weather. And then also you kind of have like a kit in your car or your office too. So if you're away, and that's more a kit that you have that is enough stuff to just get you back to home.
Yeah, like
you know,
that.
It's not like a 5-day thing. It's just enough to get you home.
Yeah, I think the car thing is a big one. Just a little kit inside the car.
Right.
Because how much time do you spend if you're stuck in traffic on the highway and all of a sudden traffic is shut down
it's
for whatever
over.
Reason?
It's not moving anymore.
You don't have any water. You don't have any food. What else do you need? Maybe some, you know, what else would you need? Food, medicine, something to keep you warm.
Right.
The other thing is interesting. What about protection? Not like birth control, but like
condoms. Then I
condoms
guess.
Are very very important in the case of an apocalypse.
Actually, that's the thing you want to get rid of is condoms, because you know you need to repopulate the earth. You know, you need to. You really what you condoms would be good for is storing water in.
You know? Like balloons.
Like a balloon, like a water balloon. Then now all of a sudden you got like a little water bladder. You know, you're not going to waste your condom on sex.
That is
That's
true.
That's a perfectly good water bladder.
I like that. The water's going to taste kind of weird, but I guess you get over
this
it.
This is an apocalypse scenario.
That is true.
Plus, you can, like, you just poke a little hole in the condom and just let it spray out
like
a little bit.
Like a cow's udder, almost.
Exactly.
You can just get your mouth underneath it.
And that way, it's easier to ration out your water because it's only a very fine stream.
Just a very fine stream.
That's right.
That's excellent. Okay, so we have to add condoms into the mix.
These are practical solutions.
I like it. What else can you use it for?
Well, in terms of protection, I think that a gun would be pretty good. Also, a knife. But I've also heard that a knife's useful and stuff, too. But you don't want a knife, I don't think, because you probably don't know how to use a knife. And then somebody's going to take it from you and use it on you. I would suggest something much simpler for somebody for protection apocalypse scenarios. Something like a blunt force object.
A baseball bat.
Like a bat or something, because anybody could swing a bat, and if you have enough passion behind it, you can probably get what you need to done
with it.
Well,
I think a good reference point for this is Anchorman. Have you ever seen the fight scene in Anchorman?
Indeed, I have.
Before, where they have the, I think there's an axe. There's one of those things with the heavy ball in the
like
end.
Like a mace.
It's like the stick with the chain with like spiked ball at the end. Mm-hmm. That's an important thing to probably have. You would just scare people away based on the fact that you'd look absolutely insane.
That's what I was thinking. Like, I do own a firearm, and it's a 22 gauge, but it looks like an M4. So it looks way more aggressive than it is. And if I was walking down the street and that was slung over my shoulder and I had my, like, go bag on my back, I don't know if anybody would fuck with me, really. You know what I mean? Like, I think the people would probably be backed off like, oh, that's the guy on the show. He's means business.
Well, and there's also a lot easier targets than the guy with the gun, unless you have something that somebody really wants.
Right, right. Yeah. For most people, probably, like, just in terms of, like, protection, like, talking more seriously about it, if you don't own a gun and you go buy a gun, you buy a revolver because it's easy to operate and they don't jam on you.
Oh, okay.
Like, when you have an automatic weapon, it's really sexy to have, like, a gun where you, like, cock it back. You know what I mean? And as you're firing it, shells are shooting out of the side and shit.
Yeah.
But those are harder to fire if you don't hold it right and it kicks back, then it won't load the next round correctly and it'll jam up on you.
When I was in the Army, I had an M16 assault rifle. You think that's a super reliable weapon because the military has it. We were in South Carolina,
Yeah.
And a little freaking grain of sand, I'm on the shooting range, shooting targets down range.
Yeah.
A little piece of sand gets stuck in the barrel or in the chamber somewhere, weapon jams.
It's crazy.
You have to go through this whole process to try to get the weapon to unjam.
Can you believe that they send people into combat with weapons that jam if we're a grain of sand and we have guys
in the desert?
Oh, my God, man. Is that, like, upsetting to you when you think of... Does that occur to you when you...
It didn't occur to me till just now, but that doesn't make sense. And it should be a little more reliable, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, they talk about the AK-47 is like, you can throw that thing in a mud puddle and pick it up and it'll always fire.
Yeah.
You know, it's not very accurate. I guess it jumps around a lot.
Yeah.
But it'll always
fire. Well, that's the thing about the M16 is you can hit a meter from a target from 300 meters away.
So it's that kind of... They have a trade-off there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
I don't really have it. I think it's a good idea for people to have, and not because I'm afraid. It's one of those things where you don't really need it until you actually need it.
Exactly.
But then the point is, you have a gun in your house. If you have children, obviously you're not going to have a gun sitting in a cupboard or somewhere where your kid can get into it and, you know, find the gun. But then I heard this guy talking the other day. What's the point of having a gun in your house if you're going to have it locked away in a safe?
Right.
If you need it, you're not going to be like, hold on a second while I go and find my safe and put in the combination and get the weapon out. So to your point, something that's safe, a blunt force object, a stun gun even might be something. Pepper spray might be something that's good.
Pepper spray, I like that. Stun gun's good. That's good. I like those. I don't like pepper spray because you can't help it. You're going to get in your own face. You're going to be affected by it. If you are just in the area of the pepper spray, you get it.
I was once at a party one time with pepper spray in college, and so somebody had it on their keychain, so I was just like, I opened it up.
Banaka.
I was just like, I just kind of sprayed like in the air real quick, and oh, nothing. Within like 5 minutes, the whole house was cleared out. It's like, wow. I was outside the porch, like coughing up a lung and snot coming out of my nose.
That's rough.
That's legit.
Yeah.
Pepper spray. Have you ever had any pepper spray before or experienced it?
I have actually. I was in Santa Barbara. I lived down there in my early 20s, and there's this town next to Santa Barbara called Isla Vista, and it's the town that encompasses UCSB, University of California, Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
And it's like Children of the Corn. I mean, it's all college students. It's literally the whole town is college students, and they have them packed in there, the density, where it's like there are 2, 3, 4 kids in one room, you know, so there'll be a 2-bedroom apartment with like up to 8 kids in there.
Yeah.
And so the streets are just flooded with people. So this one, and fights just happen everywhere. They just break out at a moment's notice, you know, and we were going home toward the end of the night, and we're in this horde of people, and so my friends get into a fight, and one of the other groups sees that I'm with that group and just grabs me, and we're like spinning, like we're both locked in, like grabbing each other's shirts and like jacket, and we're kind of like spinning with each other, and the next thing we knew, we both got pepper sprayed. Like, the cops were, like, right there. And it was a horde of people, so we didn't know who was around. And I was never even intending to be in the fight. Like, all of a sudden, we're just locked up with this kid. And to be totally honest, the look on his face, I don't think he really wanted to be in the fight either. I think he felt obligated because his friends were fighting. Like, he's got to take somebody on. Yeah. And so we got pepper sprayed, man. I don't know how close he was or anything, because I never saw it coming. And but it was really painful, totally disorienting. Like, I mean, we stopped whatever we were doing immediately, and we were just, like, dealing with this pain. So they were dumping water on our face to try to, like, help, and it didn't really help. I had my eyes closed and just squinting for probably a couple hours, the next couple hours. Like, they were talking to me and everything. I didn't open my eyes. They left. They, like, didn't arrest us or anything. You know, they left, and they're kind of like realized what happened after the fact, and let us go. And I mean, the whole drive home, you know, I had to like get into my house like blindly. And anyway, the next day I thought it was all worn off. I just wiped. I mean, I had taken a shower, everything. I wiped my face, and like the corner of my eye, and there must have been a little piece on my face, and it was like that eye was like all over again, just right back to the moment
swollen
it happened.
And watering and all that fun stuff.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so the moral of the story is pepper spray might be effective, but it's not really controllable as far as who you're going to affect with it.
How are we doing? We have both.
Okay. For whatever reason.
Right. Can't borrow anything.
Did I say you're not working?
Right.
So there's no money coming in.
Right.
You must be behind on your rent by at least, a few months before you're finally evicted from your house.
I mean, either that or all your money's going to something else.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. You have a habit that you shouldn't be doing that you're spending all your money on or
right.
whatever it might be. What do you do? So frequently I'm walking around. If I'm driving somewhere.
Well, wait a minute. You said a number of factors go into becoming homeless. What's the other one?
Oh, I was said the employment.
Right. You burn all your bridges like you can't stay at anybody's house.
Yeah, you can't stay at anybody's house. Yeah, you don't have any family anywhere.
Gotcha.
Or you burn the bridges there.
Okay.
I don't know how it would happen, but it seems like something you should prepare for.
If you're going to become, if you see, okay, I got this addiction, I'm not going to pay my rent next month, I'm going to get kicked out, I have no place to stay, so let me pack my bag accordingly? Or what do you mean?
Let's skip the details and just assume you're homeless.
Okay, you're going to homeless.
You're homeless, so, and I've never been, this is, I guess this can be, some people are probably very offended right now because, this is a serious social issue.
It
is very serious, but we're not taking it very seriously right now for the sake of entertainment.
It's more like our own rational fears and beliefs.
Yeah. Rational fear of me being, let's be honest, the chances of me being homeless are absolutely zero.
Uh-huh.
If worst comes to worst, I'll have a place to sleep and I'll be taken care of, which is a wonderful thing,
Yeah.
But, so if I'm driving down the street, I look under bridges, right? How would it be to stay underneath a certain bridge, for example?
Mm-hmm.
Would I have to move to a warmer climate? We live in San Francisco Bay Area. It's never going to get quite that cold.
Right.
What would I do about, could I get money by collecting cans, bottles? Homeless people are the best for the environment because mm-hmm. they do a lot of recycling.
That's a really good point, actually. I never thought about that.
Yeah,
they go through a garbage can and pick out all the shit that can be recycled as monetary value.
Yeah.
And they pull it out and they take it to where it needs to be.
I've seen giant bags literally giant bags of plastic and glass bottles that I don't know how much you're getting. I don't think you really get that much. I think you're probably getting $20, $30.
It's real honest work, though. I mean, they're really doing something and getting paid for it. It's
going
just not
through garbage, But we're kind of sidetracking, but I know this homeless, a lot of people use panhandling as homelessness as...
That's their revenue stream. That's where they get their...
As a job.
Yeah.
Which is you got to act a little bit, you're somewhat of an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
You got to have absolutely no shame at all. You don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time this gas station in Cleveland, Ohio, there was a guy I used to always see, and his excuse was always... I just got out of the hospital. I need to get some cab money home. That was his thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would see this guy, and I'd pull in the gas station. I'm like, oh, hell, this guy's going to do this whole thing again. So eventually I became very short with this guy. And, every time you're short with him, you're like, well, maybe I should have given this guy some money
right.
or something. Come to find out, the guy lives like three houses down.
He lived there?
Yeah, it's like a nice house.
What a jerk.
That was his... That's how he made money. He's making enough money to pay his rent.
Wow.
So I think that there is an entrepreneurial, is that the right word? I think you got to have something. You got to have
more
some
like
sort of
parasitic.
business acume to be able to pull off that whole thing with making a living by hustling money from people.
Absolutely.
You're not breaking any laws.
You got to be resourceful. You got to figure out a way to do it.
There's guys who will, I'll be eating like an outside restaurant, I've had almost people be like, are you going to finish that? That's resourcefulness right there.
Definitely.
Why throw the food away?
Now you got your meal. Now that food, that money you collected for your meal can go to something else.
Exactly.
What I mean? Whatever that is. And what's your overhead also? You have virtually zero overhead. I mean, you don't have any monthly expenses of any kind if you're homeless.
I have seen homeless guys with cell phones before.
I have seen, there's like a joke I heard about that, how like a guy asked him for you know, like a handout, and he had a nicer phone.
He had like a Samsung Note 3 or right. 4, whatever the hell it is.
I have my own. I don't even want to say it online, honestly. That's how ridiculous I am about this, but I have like my own idea about how to get money when I'm homeless.
All right, let's hear it.
Well, the basic idea is like funny gets the money.
Okay.
All right. And I saw this guy. No one's going to listen to this anyway. I saw, but I have a true fear of handing this out because I feel like this is gold right here. There's this guy I saw on H Street in San Francisco, and in 15 minutes, he must have collected $50. I swear to God. He had a sign with like this spiral.
$50 in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was really fast. He had this spiral on the sign, and it was connected to a stick going through it behind it, so he could spin it and create this like hypnotic spiral effect.
Yeah.
And on the sign around it, it said, "You will give me a dollar." And he'd spin it at people as they walked by, and they thought it was fucking entertaining and funny, so they give him a dollar. And he was just collecting dollar after dollar. And I realized, like, if something's actually funny and entertaining, if people are amused by it, they will give you a dollar. Or if they appreciate your effort, you know what I mean? If you have a particularly good personality and you're chopping it up with them and you're asking them in a nice way, they're going to give you a buck. Or if you're out there and you're banging a couple garbage cans with some fucking rhythm and you got it going, that just put a little pep in my step. Guess what, buddy? You get a dollar. You know what I mean? You're adding to my life right now. You're not just trying to, you know, take and not give.
When I walk by the drummers, I literally feel like I'm walking by a literal musical talent sometimes.
Right?
Like, this guy's been passed up. This is like, this guy could be John Bonham.
Right.
Or any other, you know, popular drummer. It seems like it to me, but realistically, it's like three white cans of different heights to create a different sound. It's just...
But if you're there in front of those garbage cans, he's
it's entertaining. People, they'll gather a crowd around. Mm-hmm. I like the honest signs, you know.
Need money for booze, yeah.
I think that's a good, but I think that one's played out at this point in time.
It's played out, and plus it's like arrogant. It's like, I don't appreciate it. Like, I know you're going to spend your money on booze, and I'm still not going to give you a dollar. Like, that was still, I don't know.
Sometimes I'll give money to the guys who are playing like really good guitar, like really talented Shit. Musicians who are down there in the subway or whatever, just sound amazing. Or a saxophone player. I've also heard some saxophone players who clearly don't know how to play the saxophone. Right? It's not making the sound a saxophone should make, but it's the pitches are changing frequently, you know, it's like that.
It's not jazz.
It's not jazzy. I don't know what it is. I'm not fooled.
You need a permit to play down those places. They're really, there's some really talented people, and you want to give them a buck. But if I'm like, if you like are like lying in wait while waiting for me to get to the machine where I buy my bar ticket and then approaching me while I have my wallet out, the answer is definitely going to be no. You know what I mean? You've created this weird situation where I have to feel obligated to give you money for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I am more fortunate than you. Like, I have money and stuff. And I also, I don't know, man. I got to earn that money. When I moved out to San Francisco, I spent like the first 6 months living out there giving away my money.
Yeah.
And then I realized like no one's ever going to stop asking and no one's ever going to give it back. You know what I mean? There are better ways to help the world than to just blindly hand out to my money to anybody that's asking for
sure.
it.
Sure. Well, it's not that I feel like I'm better than or I shouldn't give money. Like, I would probably feel like you did if I lived down there. I often just don't believe them.
Yeah.
I don't believe the reasons that they're asking for money. Like, if I'm driving getting on a highway, for example, or coming off the highway, mm-hmm. I usually end up being like, what kind of shoes is he wearing? How clean are his jeans? Does he have a haircut?
Mm-hmm.
You know, his dog seems like his dog is doing fine.
Yeah.
Well-fed dog. He's got a nice backpack.
You haven't eaten your dog yet. You obviously don't need money yet.
Right. The dog's being fed, too.
One time I was in Santa Barbara. I was walking down State Street, and this guy's like, hey, can I get a dollar so I don't have to eat this dog food, man? He's eating a can of dog food. And I'm like, how'd you buy that dog food? The dog food costs money. You could have got a bag of peanuts.
Anything. I mean, if you got a buck, what are you going to go for? A dollar cheeseburger?
See, poor decisions, I think, are the problem here. Poor decisions. Prioritizing.
You should have said, listen, I understand you need money, but let's look at some other options. Maybe you had a dollar.
Right.
You could have gone with a dollar bag of potato chips, bag of peanuts.
Right.
McDonald's used to have a legitimate dollar menu.
Uh-huh.
Double That's cheeseburger seems way more appetizing than a can of dog food.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a can of dog food,
though. You get a loaf of bread for about a buck, like fresh baked bread for about a buck, a little more. That'll just fill you up. Just drink some water. You know what I mean?
So where are you going to get food from when you're homeless, though?
I'm dumpster diving.
But okay, so just put yourself in the situation. Are you really going to eat food that you don't know how long it's been sitting there for? Or are you going to be more opportunistic and watch people throw food away in the garbage and pick it right out?
I think I'd probably feel better going in later.
Really?
You know, the whole pride thing. That's the one thing about being homeless that'd be really tough for me is, like, totally checking my pride. But I bet it's really freeing once you have no more pride left.
Because you don't give a crap.
You don't care about nothing. You're completely free. I mean, that sounds a little refreshing to me right now.
Literally in San Francisco, some of the homeless population, they don't care what they do in public.
Really don't.
There's no limits. Like,
that's one of the things I liked about San Francisco is I could act. I mean, I am a very, I'm an anxious person to a degree. I have to work on it, and I am very self-conscious, and I'm always thinking about what other people are going to think looking at me. In San Francisco, there is anonymity. There's because there's so many people, and also because of the fact that there are a lot of people doing weird stuff. You can walk down the street, like, pushing a vacuum cleaner, banging cymbals between your knees, and no one's going to look twice at you.
No.
That's, like, the fifth weirdest thing they've seen that day.
That's very true.
You know?
It's very true. I don't know what I'd do about the whole pride issue for me would be an issue. Even asking strangers for money.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The thing is, I wouldn't feel good about just, can I have a dollar? If I was doing something to earn it, I'd feel a lot better about it.
You're doing the hypnotic thing, though. You're going to do the sign.
I do the sign thing. I'll find other funny ways. You know what I mean? Bushman was an innovator.
What about the guys who sell the newspapers?
The guys who sell the newspapers?
It's like the Homeless Voice newspaper.
The street sheet?
I don't know if that's legitimate or not. I have no idea.
Yeah, they give them these papers to sell to try to help them earn income.
Yeah, so I think that's awesome.
Could do that. I'd probably be a little more entrepreneurial with it. Like, I probably wouldn't be involved with selling newspapers.
About this one? This is not my idea, but it's the carpool companion, right? So carpool companion, you figure you're going to work in the morning, okay? It's 8 a.m. You know you're going to be hitting traffic. You're by yourself. You can't get in that carpool lane.
Right.
Right. So I'm sitting on that entrance ramp, carpool companion, $5. You give me $5, I jump in the car, and you're in the carpool lane. Stress-free, you cut a good half hour off your drive, and guess what? On the way back, I'm just going to take it on the way back then.
Especially if you don't appear to be smelly.
Yeah.
Then I think you have a really good shot at that. And you pick a section of freeway where there's traffic both ways. Now you're just hopping back. Yeah, it's
brilliant.
That's
what I'm saying. You just get right back.
You go right back.
So you got a good, I mean, that's a legitimate 4 to 6 hours a week job.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I pay somebody $5 to cut some time off my.
If it's the thick of traffic, man. Yeah.
Get me in that carpool lane.
Absolutely.
I mean, the stress reduction right there, right?
Uh-huh.
You just don't got to deal with the bullshit. And you got somebody to talk to. You get to meet a new person.
It's fairly interesting, too. I mean, you could have an interesting conversation with that fella.
I think so.
A carpool companion? I mean, what led you to that career path? I'd like to know. I turn on my phone and record a podcast right there.
Maybe that's the idea of the next podcast.
Find a carpool companion.
Well, we need to get the idea out there first. I have never seen a carpool companion.
Yeah.
Why don't we?
Create the idea, wait for one to actually start doing it, and then find them and interview them?
Why don't we make this? No. Listen, this is what you should do. You make the sign, okay? So make the sign, keep it in your car. So when you're driving, you stop next to the, you stop on the X ramp or getting on or off, you see homeless guy, just take the sign, be like, here you go. Here's a business idea for you.
Fuck, man. That's
brilliant. You might
change
that guy's life.
Seriously.
You don't know what that's gonna lead to.
There is a section of 680 I can think of right now where you could just be hopping back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, man, all morning long. You take the bus back to wherever you know you like to be, hang out for a few hours, bus it back in the afternoon.
$25 a day, right?
$25 a day or $25 a rush hour?
A rush hour. So that's, you know, to say $50 a day.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
That's and you're not paying any other bills, man. That's a living wage.
Pretty good money.
Yeah.
Seems like, you know.
All right, so that's in my back pocket.
I think this is an experiment.
The other thing about being homeless that I'm really not familiar with, but would be competition among other homeless people, too, for ideas like this, if you get one going.
Yeah.
I wonder how you work it out and what the politics are within the homeless community.
Do you think there's a whole subculture of rules?
I know that there is.
There is?
I know. I've talked to, I mean, like, I did talk to more people who lived on the street when I was in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Especially on hate and, like, absolutely. There'd be a lot of stuff going on. People would ride the rails.
Yeah.
Like, down Southern California and back, and they would talk to each other about what the good spots are, and there'd kind of be cliques.
Yeah.
Of people, and they'd be, like, I remember talking to some people on Upper Haight, and they were talking about how a lot of people were going over to Berkeley to sleep overnight because they were like feuding with these people down on the Fillmore, and they didn't want to be vulnerable to that, so they were heading out of town overnight, you know. And
that's that's like a very human thing to do, is kind of have like a tribal mentality where,
yeah, it's a whole different life, man, they're living, you know.
That's interesting.
It's a different layer to society that most people have no idea about.
I love it. I don't love being homeless, but I love the politics of this whole thing.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. It's interesting. Oh, man. I think that the other thing about being homeless also is, like, you know, getting quality conversations in, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, I'd have to find some other solid folks and hook up with. I think maybe I would form a. Maybe that's the way to go. Maybe would you be a lone wolf as a homeless person?
You know, I don't
or
know.
Or would you pack up?
I think
up?
I would have to find some like-minded people that, I mean, relatively like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who was in, I don't know, I would have to find a like-minded group of people.
Because you're going to get lonely.
Yeah, you got to make friends.
Right.
But then are you making a path? Are you like planning to get out of the, move up in the world, or are you just kind of, this is the lifestyle?
No, this is it. You know, we got to make this work, I think, is the idea that I'm running with right now. Is
okay.
We're homeless. This okay. Is our choice to a degree also to be homeless. And now we're homeless. And there are a lot of people
it's
out there that choose to not.
It's hard for me to be in that position where I wouldn't feel like, all right, well, I'm homeless. Shit. Okay, I'm going to be homeless for a while, but we have to start thinking of a way to not be homeless anymore.
That's how you would think about things?
It's hard for me to not be in that mindset.
So, all right, be in that mindset. How do you get out of it? How would you work your way out?
I mean, that's such a drastically different spot to be in.
Yeah.
It's just, it seems like that way of life is so far removed from anywhere I'm at right now.
Right.
I would have to be in such a drastically different mental state to actually end up in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems easy though. How would I get out? I'd start working. Maybe I'd go hang out with Mexicans.
Well, how do you find work?
Hang out with the Mexicans and start being a day laborer,
mm-hmm.
making some money. You know what I mean?
That's not your path, man. That's not how you do it.
That's my path.
No, that's not how you do it. Because that's not success. Well, that could be. I mean, if you're hanging out, first of all, they're not going to like you for showing up on the corner where they're trying to get work. You're the gringo. You're going to get picked up first.
That
you know
is
I mean?
True.
And that, but also, I think you or I or anybody who, just about anybody, I think you hook up with like a community group, like a church group. If you can go and hook up with a church group and you're serious about getting better,
yeah.
I think they'll do a lot to help you.
The church groups will help.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think they'll hook you up with like, they'll go and advocate for you and try to find you a job, trying to find you like an address to use or, you know, that type of stuff.
You know, the big issue with church groups, I think, though, is I'm trying to see. The big issue with church groups is
we're looking at the audio here.
We're
having a little
technical. Yeah, we're having a little technical,
which
seems to be a common theme, but looks like we're working okay out right now. But the issue with the church group, well, with homelessness in general, is mental illness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get into this seriousness of it. But, you know, a lot of people don't really have the faculties to, is that the right word?
Sure.
The mental faculties to be able to make those decisions. So that's, I think, church groups, you know. And me personally, I'm going to stay away from that group, not because I'm not an ass and don't give a shit. It's just because I need to be with some people who are going to try to have some sort of life, you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
in that situation. Do people have relationships on the street?
Yeah, definitely.
Do they?
Definitely. Absolutely. I mean, from what I can see, absolutely, man.
Is it just a different culture I'm trying to put myself.
I don't know how
I'm
people
really
decide
trying to,
delve to hook
into
up.
This and see, like.
Man, I think that I mean I don't know, but I know what I've witnessed.
Yeah.
And there are definitely couples, you know what I mean, and I don't know how people decide to hook up, or if they fall into poverty together, or find each other once they're in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's probably a little bit of all of it, but I'm sure it is. Just from what I know, it's tremendously interesting, and it's a mystery world.
It seems like,
you know,
something
I mean?
Is not talked about. Like, I've never seen a documentary that's gone.
Everyone talks about the politics of homelessness,
yeah,
and the groups
that
are.
That.
Yeah, and like how people travel.
how they view the system and government that helps them out or doesn't help them out.
It's more. Well, I've seen some of that, definitely.
Well, I understand, but what's their view of it, though?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when there's mental illness involved, a lot of times people will be skeptical of. Government organizations, any type of help from or any organization of that, for that matter.
Right.
You become very paranoid that they're, you know, medication, what are they trying to give me?
Yeah.
Or, you know, why are they trying to do this? And so there's that. I mean, I don't know what everybody thinks of it, but I know that there's some skepticism, I think,
mm-hmm.
Involved, or maybe they won't actually help you. I don't know. I can't speak for anybody else, but I know that there are a ton of documentaries of people being interviewed about that. And I think that that's the main focus of those documentaries, is looking at, you know, the social problems involved. What leads to the homelessness? What are the political, like, macro-political problems, like the actual government, you know, problems that
What's
lead
a societal
to
problem?
The societal,
issue,
thank you, yeah.
Issue
but I'm talking
place.
About the politics of...
No,
the
I get it. Yeah,
world. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
No, I totally get it.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
the subculture of
what is it to be? Yeah,
and what's the homeless population in San Francisco Bay Area? It's got to be. I don't even know what it is.
But well, it is homeless friendly. Like, laws in San Francisco are more friendly to people that are living on the street that don't have a home. So, who knows? You know what I mean? There's no census, right, for homeless people.
Well, exactly. But I'm saying there's thousands. Definitely thousands, right? We're not in the hundreds. We're talking thousands, probably tens of thousands at some point in time, spread across the area.
Wow, yeah. Probably. I mean, if you think about the total population. What's the total population of the Bay Area?
I think it's around 7 or 8 million.
What percentage of people are homeless? Would you say 1%?
Why don't you ask Google really quick?
All right. I mean, if it was 1%, that would be 70,000.
That seems like a lot.
That's a lot.
But right. I know there's, like, we're out in the suburbs in the East Bay, and I know there's homeless out here.
There are, yeah. There's actually
good
in certain
number.
Areas, there's, like, real, like, communities.
Yeah, and that's been a big issue is, you know, the mental health is a big issue in the homeless community. You know, it's just, you know, when you think about it, it's sort of as a shame that there's, that's an issue in the first place, and that they don't even have access to the resources that they need, because there's such a stigma around homelessness. And you and I are talking. I don't even understand how somebody gets in that position. I have no idea.
Well, what are some of your ideas?
What are some ideas of how?
Yeah, so maybe
I'm going to sound really ignorant when I say that, when I talk about this, but I'll try my best.
Okay.
I think mental illness is the big one.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably you'll find a history of severe abuse. Neglect, some sort of trauma background. I think occasionally you'll get the free spirit. Probably the younger person is like, fuck it, I don't want to do anything. I'm not going to deal with society. You kind of get those people who are against the culture. Obviously, drug addiction is one reason somebody might be on the streets.
Mm-hmm. I think there's such, yeah, definitely.
What do you think?
I think that,
did you get the numbers?
Well, I was just starting to look at it. It says, with 2007 as a benchmark, the data from the report showed a 6.8% decline of homelessness among individuals, 3.7% decline of homelessness of families, 13.1%. Well, it's telling me the decline's not.
But we know it's getting less. I guess that's positive.
That's good. I will say, though, I mean, it's people don't think about it, I guess. There's like a war on homelessness, or people are trying to fight homelessness.
Like they had it to go away, or trying to like fight homelessness, like we're battling them?
No, like trying to get homelessness to go away. And since there have been homes, there's been homelessness. I mean, homelessness is like, I think homelessness isn't going to go anywhere necessarily. Just under 8% of homeless youth.
So I'm actually found a SanFrancisco.gov that looks like it's going to try to tell me what the latest poll is for homeless population in the Bay Area. So here we go.
All right, while you look, are you finding it right now?
Yeah, I got this on SFGo. Here it is right here. So unsheltered and sheltered point in time homeless count trend. So it looks like the unsheltered and sheltered point in time homeless count. So maybe people who are homeless have a place to stay for a little bit. 2013 in San Francisco city limits only. So San Francisco is a very small place.
Right.
6,436. Youth count, so people under 18, 914 homeless children, which is staggering if you think about that.
That's a lot of kids.
I mean, these are kids who obviously don't have parents. That's somewhat surprising. What do you think about
that? Well, homeless kids or kids that are in, not kids that are in the foster system, because they have homes.
Yeah, these are saying homeless children.
I would imagine homeless children have parents. Otherwise, they're just out there on the street.
Did they run away from home?
I guess. Oh, I guess if it's under 18, it could be teens too.
I'm looking right here. Youth count homeless, 914. Sheltered homeless, so this could be considered fostered in youth, 3,035.
Okay.
In 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Unsheltered, 914. So they're saying 3,000 kids sheltered.
Right.
914 totally off the grid.
That's like a quarter, pretty much, of the homeless kids.
That seems pretty interesting. So single adults, let me see if I can get some. You want a couple more?
No.
No? No more stats?
No more stats. It's boring the hell out of me.
All right. Yeah, so that's the number. That's what?
That's a lot of people, right?
In San Francisco,
it's lower than we thought. I mean, if San Francisco...
is very small geographically, though.
What's the population in San Francisco?
I think my best guess is I'm going to say somewhere like 600,000, 400,000 maybe.
So we're talking about like 10%.
It seems like it.
I'm sorry, 1%. If it's 600,000, you're talking about like 7,000 people or so homeless.
So you're looking at 5% then. 10% will be 70,000.
Yeah, so 1% would be like, anyway. But it's a pretty low number. I'm thinking like 1%.
what problem are we trying to solve right now?
We're trying to figure out what percentage of people are homeless.
I'm just trying to find out the population of San Francisco is 837,000.
So if it's 800,000,
yep.
Then about, and you said there's about 7,000 people that are homeless.
Yeah.
That's nearly 1%.
Okay, so you were right off the bat.
Yeah.
You said 1%.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, we don't even need to go through these processes. You just trust me.
But just look at the. But anyway, the point is,
how would I get out of poverty? Was that the question?
Yeah.
Before?
What are you doing to get out of this?
No, it was, why do I think people become homeless, or how do they become homeless?
Yes, that was the question. That's, and then after this, we're going to wind up, because we're getting into a whole other area, which I'm completely unqualified to talk about.
Oh, yeah. We're just off the cuff here.
Yeah,
we're
totally off the cuff.
Yeah. So, I think that the reasons you mentioned, people are making very poor choices about their money. You know what I mean? They're not taking care of themselves. Like, that could be with addiction to gambling or drugs. I think that sometimes people are in situations where the home that they're in, they don't make money anyway. Like, maybe you are a miner, or you are, you know,
like a, you're like a,
you're
like,
dependent,
like a coal miner.
Yeah, like a coal. You could be. I mean, I think they pay those guys pretty well, though. No, like a underage.
That was the funniest thing I said all day.
underage, or you are, you know, like your wife. You know, your stay-at-home mom. You're in this abusive situation. You know, maybe you choose to leave home, but you have nowhere to go. You could find yourself in dire straits.
Like I was saying, domestic violence, abuse.
Yeah,
like that.
Absolutely. So you probably ran over a lot of the reasons why people become home. And sometimes it is a choice.
I'm sure it wasn't an easy path for the majority.
Yeah. Man, I
can't imagine. Unless there was addiction involved or serious abuse. I think there's a small percentage of people who just want to live that way. But
right.
I don't know.
I think there are plenty of people that choose to live that way for one reason or another. And also, I don't envy them at all. I don't think, like, we made light of the situation plenty during the show today. But, I don't think it's easy by any stretch of the imagination or enviable or that, it's easy to get out of.
No, I don't think it's easy to get out of.
And it's wildly dangerous. And
it's a very high-risk way to live.
Yeah.
I think it's awful. I mean, I can't imagine having to. I mean, we take a lot for granted on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You're talking about a human being's life, you know, and you and I have got more into the, you know, some more of the bigger questions of purpose. You know, what's your purpose when you're homeless? Like, what are you trying to do besides just living day to day, moment to moment? Maybe there is some freedom in that, but there's also a lot of danger and a lot of. I'm sure there's not a lot of 95-year-old homeless people out there just, you know.
You brought up, like, the most interesting question so far is, like, what's your purpose when you are homeless? It's like the answer is probably pretty obvious for some people. Like, the purpose is to get high again or whatever. Some people aren't even aware.
To get high or just to get the next meal.
Or to get the next meal. To survive.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the hierarchy of needs kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? Your purpose is to just survive.
I think that might be my obsession with homelessness is, I wouldn't call it an obsession, but it really strips away. When I think about it, I think that it really strips away all the other stuff that you have going on because you're so focused just on I need to survive.
Absolutely.
And so all those other things you and I worry about, you know, complaining about our jobs or whatever it might be, financial issues, not a problem anymore.
Life's not fun to deal with. Like, everything that we have to deal with in life is not preferable. Like, it sucks. And, you know, some people are not up to the challenge. And whether you're choosing to not buy in and the consequence of that is living on the street, or, you know, I've heard the same thing, like, in addiction before. Like, there's a function to being an addict and living that struggle, because if you're dealing with that problem, you don't have to deal with the other problems.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And whether that's in active use or in sobriety, I mean, your sobriety, and we're getting sobriety, could eclipse everything else in your life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that could be a really good way to avoid, without trying to trash that, but I mean, there are ways to avoid dealing with life.
Yeah.
And
I mean, human suffering is... I think it exists in all levels, all cultures, all subcultures, and I think it's very relative across the board. I couldn't tell you, the homeless guy probably would laugh at us for the problems that we have, but we would be like, for us, it's very real.
Yeah.
It's very real.
Yeah.
You have your problems too, which I can't even imagine.
Oh, man. I try to keep that inner homeless guy alive. Keep him laughing at my problems, reminding me that
that
these are ridiculous problems.
The inner homeless guy.
Yeah, that's actually I kind of dig that.
I think that you can take that somewhere. I think.
Trademark that.
That's gonna be your first
copyright.
Book.
Inner homeless guy.
Inner homeless guy. Hey, this is a good place to end right there.
All right.
We're actually at an hour, so that's a good. Awesome. So
we'll be back next week
if we don't fuck up the recording.
Fun and
some more fun and entertainment on our way next week. All right, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.